Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm Pat Sloan, and I'm always on the lookout for interesting quilt stories. The story might be something that's going on in the industry or just going on in a community, because communities do a lot of very fun things, and some of them involve an aspect of quilting. And so a story came across my screen the other day, and I was just right on it. I'm like reading the article, and I'm like, okay, I need to talk to these people. This is so cool. Over in Montclair, New Jersey, there's a high school student named Haley Winstead who decided for a community project for her Girl Scouts to paint this quilt block. And so I contacted the newspaper who sent me to the organizer, and I am really pleased. Laura Torchio is here to tell me about the whole project. Hi, Laura. Thanks for coming and joining me.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
Now, first, give me a backstory on yourself, because you are part of an organization. You work for an organization called Eat, Play, Live Better, which is an amazing title. What is that about?
Thank you. Yes, Eat, Play, Live Better is a healthy eating, active living coalition of partners in the Montclair, New Jersey area. And it's funded by the Partners for Health Foundation. And these partners work together to make healthy food and physical activity easy to access in everyday life. And we believe that if we build healthy food access and movement into our daily lives, we're going to live longer and better and happier. So
it's good.
Yeah.
It's a whole lifelong choice that we should all make, right? That's awesome.
It really is. And sometimes it's not a choice, and it's policies and infrastructure that really are critical to us being able to make the healthy choice. And for those of us who don't have the choice, you know, to be physical active every day or, I'm losing my train of thought. I'm sorry about that.
No, it's okay.
Sometimes it's not a choice to bike and walk. And, you know, if we make our community safer and healthier, then we can, and then we build the physical activity into our daily lives.
Yeah, it's you're a huge proponent for that, and it's wonderful. Now, I know that you belong to that. That is your job, because you're coordinator there. But how did your organization and you yourself get involved with Haley and her Girl Scout project to build this quilt block?
Well, it was really interesting. My career has been involved in bicycle and pedestrian planning, and I learned about intersection murals and calling them street quilts about 10 years ago. Haley is in a Girl Scout troop that my daughter's in right now, and they had to do a community project. And Haley wanted to do some kind of community building and neighborhood beautification. And she was thinking about murals because she was inspired by some painted walls under an overpass in the community. And I said, Haley, I have the perfect project for you. What we can do is we can work with the town, and we can paint the actual pavement at the intersection of one of the four-way stop locations in town. She thought that was a really great idea, and that's how we got started with the project.
Now, Haley is in ninth grade, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, and this is for, and I appreciate that you being able to jump in. We tried to schedule her, and, you know, she's a very active ninth grader, so we couldn't. This was easier.
She sure is. I think she's actually playing field hockey right now as we
speak. So she was doing her Girl Scout. It's called the Silver Award, and that has a level. It has multiple things that have to be accomplished, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Correct. So
Girl Scouts have projects they do for the community at every age. And at the cadet level, they work on something called their Silver Award, which is about bringing community together and creating a lasting change. And it also is a way for the girls to take on some kind of leadership role in the community. And then when they're older, they can take on the next level, which would be their Gold Project. But Haley decided to do her silver project and make it the community street quilt for that.
So tell me how she approached this, because I think there are people in many, many communities across the world that would be interested in doing a project like this to build community and, you know, promote health and everything else. You know, what was what were her steps that she needed to do in order to get this rolling? Because you just can't show up and paint in a city street.
Right. Right, and it's funny that we're calling it a quilt, right, because it's actually a mural, and it's on the pavement, but because it's a square and we envision many, 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 many intersections painted, we that's where we came up with the name of a community street quilt, because they're beautiful designs that tie the whole town together. But part of the steps that were involved, I mean, first she had to get together with me and the police and the township engineer and the town council and talk about this project that she wanted to do. And one of the reasons the town is very much in favor of this community street quilt and painting the intersections is because not only does it bring community together and have the neighbors begin to take ownership of that part of the world, it also has a traffic calming effect. And Montclair Township is very interested in pedestrian and bicycle safety and reducing crashes altogether. And also, neighborhood identity and community togetherness. It's a really important integral part of the Montclair community. So once we got the council involved, then she reached out and had a contest with the schools nearby so that they could submit designs. And the winning design got to put their, you know, their image on the pavement at the intersection.
So how did she host the contest? Because I was really interested in that part, because for people who, you know, who are listening to this, we're mostly quilters. And then I'll just tell you that this is like an applique type design. So think of it more like applique, almost like a medallion center. It's large and gorgeous. But the people she was doing this contest with, did they really know what a quilt was? How did she get the message across to them?
Well, I'm not sure how much they knew about quilting per se, but she did really want to make this a youth-involved project.
Oh, okay.
And because the location was in the neighborhood of two middle schools and a high school, she made the contest available to kids from 12 to 17. And we had, I can't remember how many designs we got, but of the ones we liked, we had an artist kind of blend it together and turn it into one square that kind of included some of the elements of all of their designs. And the idea is that eventually you'll have intersection murals that represent the culture and community of that location, but have some kind of theme that ties together the entire town. And that's why we're calling it the community quilt, because we really want to connect our entire community this way.
I think that the name of it is amazing, because quilts are made by multiple blocks. There's a long tradition of barn quilts, which are painted on barns or placards placed on barns. And the barn quilt movement has been around for quite a few years. And I actually was just teaching in Mississippi, and the community center there put a barn quilt, a block, on their community building. So it you know, brought that whole focus, and that's where the quilters met. Now, the image that they came up with, I love that it has children in it. There are children all around the edges and hearts and leaves. When you got that design ready, what was the sort of day? Did it take just one day to paint this?
Yeah, it took from start to finish, because we had some of the steps in place already ahead of time. From start to finish, it took about 4 months to get volunteers and all the permitting and stuff together. But the day of, we got out there with our design and we mapped it on a grid on a piece of paper. Then we chalked the intersection with a larger version of that grid. And then we chalked out the design. And I think, let's see, we started painting by about 9:30. We started painting and we were finished at 3. That gave us about an hour and a half for the paint to dry, and by 4:30, it was open and cars were driving on it.
Oh my goodness, that was a that was amazing.
It was crazy, and we had over 90 people show up, and it was one of the hottest days in August. So,
of course,
it was pretty brutal, but it was so much fun and definitely worth it. And you know, I hope to do it again. And you know, Haley said she's really excited by the project and she's willing to do more intersections if we can schedule them out.
Right, right. The when the community was all there, we have about a minute or so here. When the community all came out, were there families? Was it on the weekend so that a lot of, you know, you had 90 people? That's a lot.
It was a Sunday in August, and pretty much everybody in Montclair goes away for the month of August, so we knew it was going to be a quiet time. But we had families from all over town. We had kids of all ages, seniors, and we had people just happening upon the intersection who were so excited and said, you know what, I have a case of soda in my fridge. Let me bring that to you. And they were bringing us food and coming out and getting their hands dirty and painting, even if they didn't know about it ahead of time. It was really a wonderful community building event. We had music and dancing and lots of food, and it's just really an amazing testament to community building and togetherness.
Oh, I love it. Can you give the intersections of the street names in case anybody's in that area?
It's in Montclair, New Jersey, and it's at the intersection of Forest Street and Chestnut Street.
And it's is it a roundabout or it's just a regular intersection?
No, it's not a roundabout. It's just a four-way stop intersection.
Okay.
With a beautiful medallion in the middle.
And the cars are driving over it.
Yeah, they are.
Oh, Laura, this has been just so much fun to hear about. Would you tell Haley that I appreciate all that she did, and quilters are just thrilled for her project?
I will tell her. Thank you so much for having us.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. If you want to see more about Eat, Play, Live Better, you can do eatplaylivebetter.org. And then on my website is a link. We'll be right back.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
Like American Patchwork and Quilting on Facebook for daily quilting inspiration, tips, and giveaways. Find us at facebook.com/APQ Magazine. See our editors share their tips, ideas, and techniques by visiting allpeoplequilt.com and clicking on videos.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. This show is hosted by Moda Fabrics, and you can visit them at modafabrics.com. There's lots of great goodies on their website. And to segue that, I have a Moda designer here to talk with me. Betsy Chutchen has been on before, and she has her first fabric line with Moda, and we are going to hear all about it. So hi, Betsy, how are you?
Hi, Pat. I'm doing great. How about you?
I am wonderful. I am so excited. Is your line in stores yet?
It should be. I received some here at the house Thursday or Friday.
Yay!
One day last week. Anyway, so it's getting there.
It's getting there. So tell me a little bit about the line. It's called Eliza's Indigo,
Eliza's Indigo.
And you always have, I have to tell people, you always have the best stories, Betsy.
Oh, everything I do has to have a story with it. Sometimes they're funny and sometimes they're not.
I know. I just love it that, you know, it's like, and this is no different. You have, just tell us about Eliza's Indigo.
Well, Eliza's Indigo was inspired by two things. One of my antique quilts has a beautiful chintz border. And when we looked at that, talking about the line, it was perfect for this line. And then that quilt is full of indigos, and Eliza Lucas Pinckney came to mind. I love quilt history. I love women's history. She didn't quilt that I know of, but she was instrumental in establishing indigo as a major crop in the 1700s for South Carolina to send to England. And England loved it, made South Carolina do really well as a colony, and it's just a wonderful story. She started this when she was 16.
Oh, my goodness.
Who has a daughter at 16 that's capable of running three plantations, developing indigo into a major cash crop for their colony? I mean, she was amazing. She was an amazing woman.
Oh, my goodness. So now, had she kind of been on your mind because you just like to read about the history?
Well, several years ago in this club I run, I gave some history, different women, everything. And we were looking at indigo, studying the color. And I came across her in one of my books. So it was really random. And then to talk about her then, without any, you know, real purpose other than she was an interesting person and to go along with the indigo. And then she just popped back in my mind. Things have a strange way of coming back around in my head.
Well, we're lucky they do. That is just the neatest thing ever. Now, tell me about the colors and the patterns in this line.
Okay, we've got patterns from the very early 1800s. So it's like the line is 1810 to 1830. So they're very early prints because of the chintz in that in that antique quilt. And the colors are really rich indigos, good chocolate browns. There's a dreamy, yummy gold in it it's kind of close to cheddar, but not exactly. It's just a yummy color. And then we have another real soft blue and an ocean blue. So there's lots of blues in the line.
And you would think that with the indigo. So that's
yes.
Now, when you're doing this from antique fabrics, do you own the antique fabrics, or you go out into the archives and look for them at either Moda or online?
I don't look online for them. Okay. I either own the quilt, own the fabrics, or look in the archives at Moda. Moda has a fabulous archive. But I do feel a deep connection to the quilts. I collect them. I have an addiction, not just to fabric, not just to sewing, but to antique quilt collecting, along with other collections. But I feel a deep connection that way. I don't know, it kind of helps me develop my story for that particular quilt line. Okay. Does that make sense?
It does. It really does. I personally love the stories. I mean, and I love to know that people before us did something very much like we do. You know, it's not really that much different in some ways. That always really feels good to me. It's like thinking, oh, somebody else did this too, or they thought this too.
Exactly.
Yeah, this woman was amazing. I just can't believe it. Of course, I was talking in the earlier segment to a young woman who's in ninth grade and ran this whole community project. She might be able to run a plantation.
I bet. I'm just thinking back on my daughter at 16. No way.
Yeah, well, most of us are doing a little other things at 16. Are
right.
you Are you running several patterns to go with this, or?
I have three patterns, and they're at United Notions. It's Belmont, Garden Hill, and Charleston. And those patterns are named after Eliza's plantations and her home in Charleston.
Yeah. See, you bring that whole story around.
It's right. And inside each pattern is a little segment, you know, with some history in it. I'm all about the history. I love making that connection.
Mm-hmm. And you've written several books that, you know, when you were on here before, we talked about some of those that are very detailed and for people who love to read that backstory. And then you can find all that information at your website, too. So,
yes. Well, on my blog. I don't have a website. I'm still techy enough to have a website, but
a blog's a website. It's the same
blog's
thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. It's the same thing. So we wanted you and I were chatting beforehand, and I wanted to talk a little bit about scraps. How do you handle your scraps?
What a question for me. I don't know. I guess some people might say I'm a hoarder with my scraps, but they're in tubs and baskets and piles. They're just everywhere. They're kind of out of control.
So
but
you don't
I do
worry
like
too
to keep
much.
Them. Don't worry about it.
No.
They are out of control.
All right. Well, we will need to see some pictures of that sometime.
No.
No. So another thing we're doing here on the radio is talking about secrets to make your quilts better. And every designer has something, every quilt maker has something that they do that really they feel helps them make better quilts. What do you do?
Well, I think the best thing I've come across, and this is after years of sewing, I didn't used to wash my fabric. I never washed my fabric. I just sewed. And then gradually over time, I was noticing that if I used some steam or spritzed it, then I was getting some odd shrinkage in places. And it was making my piecing look not quite as accurate as I want it to be. So I've started, and I've done this for several years now, but I've started starching my fabric before I cut it. And it seems to be making all the difference in the world, and I'm telling all of my students that. And I do pre-wash now, so I'm doing a lot of steps that some of my students think is a waste of time. But in the interest of getting to a point where you are really accurate with your cutting and your piecing, I think you have to give everything a try. So I've asked them to pre-wash and dry and then at the iron to you know, starch their fabric and press it again. So a couple of years ago, I taught a class that was a flip and sew, quilt as you go type quilt with a courthouse steps block. And I asked them to go through this process. And one of the students had her strips cut, and they literally stood up. They were so stiff. Now, I don't like them quite that stiff, but, I mean, they need to have some good body to them. And you can use any kind of starch, but it just seems to be making a lot of difference to me. And more of my students are coming back and saying they appreciate that knowledge, you know, to try that, and that they're having good luck with it as well.
Now, are you then washing everything afterwards to soften it back up?
No, I'm leaving it crisp. Kind of a crisp finish until it's been quilted. And then, you know, depending upon its use, if it's like just going to market, it's not going to be washed before it goes to market. But, you know, after it's either been photographed or whatever and I'm ready to use it here at home, then I'll wash it.
Okay, so it just it all depends then. Yeah, it's like I think for cutting strips, it must really keep them from bowing.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's awesome for cutting strips.
Yeah. Okay, everybody's going to run out, have a run on starch now.
Well, they will.
Yes, they will. You need a commission off of that.
Well, now, I'm not the only one that's become a big starch fan, so you might be hearing more of that.
Yeah, you know, I didn't come from a world of doing that. My buddies and my teachers, nobody did that. So it took me a little while to figure out that people did that. And I do it occasionally, but I'm actually leaning more like you are, is like, you know, let's just give these things a try and see if they work and when they work.
Right.
You know, sometimes you use them for a certain thing, but not for everything.
Right.
Like, don't starch your fabric, you're going to needle turn. It's not so good.
No, that doesn't work. This is just for cutting.
Just for cutting. Now, I wanted to tell people that you have a project on American Patchwork and Quilting's website, allpeoplequilt.com, called the Harvest Table Topper. It's really cute, so they should go out and take a look at that. Tell me in, like, couple of seconds here. Do you travel and teach a lot still?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I've slowed down a little bit. It's a lot to do to design fabric, write patterns and books, and keep up with everything, teach a club. But I do. I still love to travel and teach.
That's good. So everybody can visit you at betsysbestquiltsandmore.blogspot.com. And you have a nice little free pattern out on your right sidebar.
I do. I'm not techy enough to get it exactly where it should have been. I want it to be kind of a link, but anyway, it works. If you just click on it, you can save it and print it.
That's wonderful. Betsy, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you, Pat. This was so much fun. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. We'll be right back after the break.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg. Join me in 2015 for a brand new video series called Show Me How, brought to you by Baby Lock. Each month, I'll show you how to complete a simple project from start to finish. Learn new techniques, see tips, and sew a great project. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/videos to watch.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American and Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I am going to have a great segment here talking to Michelle Jensen, who is a long armor. She's a pattern designer, and she is a new author with Martin Gale of a book called Little Big Stuff, Pint-Sized Playsets to Sew for Kids. She writes at mixyheart.com. So, Michelle, thank you for being here.
Hi, Pat. I'm excited to talk to everyone. This is great.
Oh, this is so much fun. I love what you do. I mean, you have great things on your site. It's always so happy. You do such happy things.
Yeah. I know. I think I'm probably a kid at heart, so that comes out in my quilting for sure.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, we should all be that lucky to stay that way, right? You know?
Yes.
Playful and fun. Yeah. So you started out, your backstory is most of your business was started as long arming, right, for other people?
No, other way around. Pattern design first. And then I wanted a better way to finish all of my patterns, and so I decided to jump into long arming, and I didn't realize how much I would enjoy having quilters come to my house every day and get to talk quilting all day long. So it's really fun, and then I get to see what others are working on, and I've really enjoyed that part of quilting. Long arming's really fun to transform a project from, you know, a piece state to the finished quilted state. It's fun.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, so you kind of did do it the other way around, and yes. that is really neat. I know one or two other people that kind of did that, but that's most of the time. You know, you're doing all these things, and then you start designing. So to explain to me a little bit about what your projects look like, I love your banners.
Okay, so one of my largest pattern series is quilt samplers. Mm-hmm. So I personally love to applique, and I just have a lot of fun, you know, going decorating my house with mm-hmm. little applique pillows and quilts. And I'm really seasonal. I like to freshen my house up with, you know, bright colors in the summer and kind of muted ones in the spring and in the fall. And so I just kind of gravitate towards that, and that's where my pattern design have gone to.
Yeah, they're really, really fun. I love seasons as well. I think that's why I was like, when I see your stuff, I'm like, oh, it's so cute. I want to make that.
Oh, thank you so much.
They're really, really wonderful. Very playful and just adorable. I love the banners. She has lots and lots of banners. So let's talk about how you came about with the book idea, because you know, you have children, right?
Yes. So I started out quilting. I joined my local quilting guild, and I knew nothing about quilting about 5 years ago. So it's kind of funny how far you can come in just a short time, you know, just with learning and practicing. I joined my local quilting guild, and I started quilting, and I had a lot of fabric laying around, and my mm-hmm. kids wanted me to make little things for them. So that's kind of how I got started. I made a diaper bag, which was my first pattern that I was selling as a design that I made myself. And it was just because my little girl played with dolls, and I thought, hey, I can make her a little doll diaper bag. So it's one of my most favorite patterns, and it's in the book, and it was just fun. And then, of course, I had a little boy that came along, and he wanted me to sew things for him, too. So I had to be really creative and think outside of the box and, you know, make boy stuff, which is kind of hard.
They don't want diaper bags. That's
No. So instead of a diaper bag, I made him a pet carrier, and he put a little, you know, stuffed puppy in there, mm-hmm. and it had a little pet bed. And that's in the book, too. And so it kind of, you know, I had to make it even, and the whole book is even for boys and girls. And then also, you know, the little pet carrier worked for my little girl too. She liked, she had a little puppy too. And so then I had to make her one. And so it's kind of, once you commit, you have to just keep making thing after thing after thing. But it's really fun, and it's a good way to use your fabric, you know, that you pick up along the way. So,
well, I think that what's really neat about the book is that any parent, aunt like myself, grandma, it will find things in here that they can make for those children they want to create for. So, you know, you have quite a few things, but would you tell me about the little store? Because when I saw the little store, it's like, oh, my heart just went, oh, because I, you know, I had a little kitchen when I was a little girl, and I think it's so fun.
Well, I think, I love that project in the book. It's so cute. And what's kind of fun about it is that it's a little play set, and it's themed around an open shop, so little kids can sell candy or flowers, or you know, or they could use it as a little house. But and I made the sample with chalk cloth, mm-hmm. so then they can write on the fabric and kind of customize it to what they're doing and erase it and create something new. But it has little windows so that they can work outside of the little shop and, you know, I don't know, little drive up their little car and maybe pick up some
fast food. There we go.
Yeah, some fast food. There you go. So a fabric shop. There you go. Right. A drive-through fabric shop.
Yeah. Now, this is built off of what kind of a structure?
It is just on a card table. So it fits a standard-sized card table. And my card table is just a little bit taller. I have a hard top card table. Mm-hmm. But it fits, you know, all the standard size card tables, it's just a difference about of an inch. You know, you can customize it if you need to make it a little shorter. You can just take off an inch on the side. But it folds up. You know, all of us have a card table, and it folds up and puts, and you can put it away. So it's not something that you have to have out all the time, but it's perfect if, you know, there's the perfect day and you want to get it out and have some little kids draw and play together. I think it's a really cute project to have in your house. Definitely.
Can you give me a tip, Michelle, on sewing with this material that you can write on? Because I've never used that material.
Okay. Well, chalk cloth, it's really simple to sew with. It's kind of, I would say, it's not slippery like laminate. Mm-hmm. It has a little bit more, it's closer to cotton or something like that. I mean, so it sews on the sewing machine really well, and it's, I believe it's washable as well. So it's, mm-hmm. you know, it just really, it's a good product to work with, and it's kind of fun to draw with little chalk pens that they have. Yeah. And now they have those in the stores, and it just, it's kind of fun to practice on and draw. I found myself drawing quilting shapes on it. And right. So,
of course,
it's really a handy, textile. I really liked it.
Did you have to use, did you use a heavier weight thread, or did you use a special foot?
No, I didn't have to do that. It just sews right. No problem through the sewing machine, no big deal. Just regular thread, regular needle and foot. And yep, it's easy.
It's
very easy to work with. Yes.
Yep. Now, I had asked you in advance if you had a special technique, something you did so either to save you time, and you told me that you like to bind your pillows with bias tape. How do you do that? Can you describe it?
That's kind of fun. And it's nice to work with bias tape, and in my book, I've used it in a lot of different projects.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just really easy to do, to edge it, your project that you're working on. And I've been making the doll diaper bags for so long, and one time I just was hemming a pillow, and I thought, hey, this would be really cute if I just put binding on the edge of the pillow. And it really does finish the back of the pillow really cute and kind of adds a little pop of color. And it's, you know, it's fast. And I think, you know, rather than going back and forth to the ironing board and pressing your fabric, it's just kind of quick to just throw that bias tape on the edge and finish the project that way.
So the bias, that's on the outside. So like you're covering the raw edge of the seams on the outside.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So it's called single fold binding tape is what I think what the correct term is.
Mm-hmm.
But if you cut it on the bias, then it becomes bias tape. So,
mm-hmm.
And then you can go around curves and it has that nice flat lay. But on the back of pillows, you don't necessarily need to have that curve. So you can just do, you know, fold that fabric mm-hmm. and cut it on the cross cut. So, yeah.
Sounds like a time saver, and I bet people have that around that they're not even using.
Right, and so that would be perfect. You know, if you have a scrap of binding from a project, you can just throw it on the back of your pillow. So that's, mm-hmm. that's great. And I do have a tutorial of that on my website. So
Okay.
If someone wants to see a little step-by-step, they can go check that out.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, because sometimes the visual is so much easier than listening to it. Got to go then go see it in motion.
That's right, because we are all different kinds of learners, visual learners, and sometimes we can just read. Some lucky people just can read and they know exactly what they're doing. But I like to see it. It helps me. So, yeah.
Definitely. I wanted to ask you another question that I always like to know when people go out and about as a quilt maker and a designer and now in a long armor. When you go to like a quilt show, what attracts you the most? You know, what do you want to go see first?
Well, that's kind of a fun question. I think from my perspective, the quilt shows are so exciting and. Mm-hmm. Overwhelming and very lots of stimuli is going on. You know, I am a pattern designer, so I'll look at the design, the pattern design, the quilt design, and then I'm a long arm quilter, so then I look at the quilting that they've, the way that they've finished their quilt off, and then just color. I'm really inspired by what colors are mixed together and. It's just I'm amazed by everyone's creativity, and it's just so inspirational to see what other people will put together and create. And I just think that's kind of the exciting thing about the quilting industry is just that it's just unbelievable what we're all capable of, and it's kind of exciting because I think art and quilting is just such a fun, amazing thing to appreciate, you know.
And so many people can make something creative, even if they feel like, oh, I can't draw. Well, they can sew, you know, they can,
right.
And they can do amazing color. So I agree. It's just a wonderful, wonderful place to be. You know,
absolutely.
I really enjoyed this, Michelle. This has been so much fun.
Yes. Well, I'm happy to be able to talk to you and share how much I love quilting, and it's just kind of a treat for me. So I appreciate this opportunity. Thank you.
You're welcome. Everybody visit Michelle at mixieheart.com. We'll be right back.
Thanks.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making pillowcases and creating smiles. For people who love to sew or quilt, it's so easy to lift spirits and bring smiles to hospitalized kids, homeless families, and others in need. Simply join American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. Make one, two, or more pillowcases and donate them in your local community. You'll create just as many smiles. Join the movement today. Find complete details, download free patterns, and record your donations online at allpeoplequilt.com/million pillowcases.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm Pat. And now we are going to talk about my favorite shape in a quilt, a half square triangle. I love them. And my buddy Jenny Baker has designed and written an entire book on half square triangle quilts. And I am thrilled that she's back here to talk to me about it. Hi, Jenny. How are you?
Hi, Pat. How are you? I'm good.
I love your book with all the half-square triangles.
Thank you.
Your cover is amazing.
We really had a lot of fun with it.
You knocked it out of the park on the cover. That is just eye-catching.
Well,
and
thanks.
It's you.
Actually, it's not me. That's the secret.
Oh, it looks
it's
like you.
It's my body double. Yeah.
Oh. Now, that is freaky, you know, a little bit.
Right?
Yes.
I probably shouldn't say it, but I don't know. I think it's kind of funny.
I think it is, too. Well, that's great. So now you have a double.
Yeah.
So you can have
a stunt
quilter for you to take.
A stunt quilter. I need one.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we all need one.
Especially for all the trimming. I'll just have the stunt quilter do all the trimming, and then I'll do the sewing.
Yeah, you know, I think this will work. I think we should start a trend.
We have
a whole community of stunt quilters. Your book is with Lucky Spool, and tell me, you have kind of like several parts in the book, which I think is really exciting. So first, tell me why you decided on half square triangles for your book.
Well, I really wrestled for a long time. I knew I wanted to write a book, but I wasn't sure exactly what about. I thought maybe I might write about color, but I don't know. It wasn't speaking to me. And then I really sat down and was intentional about trying to find a topic that fit with my talents and fit with my interests. And as soon as I thought of half square triangles, I was like, oh, this is it. Mm-hmm. I've always loved them. The first block I ever tried was a log cabin, and half square triangles were second. And I've made, beyond the projects in the book, I've made tons of other half square triangle projects. And I've just always liked them. I don't know why. I'm a little bit of a glutton for punishment, I think. All the trimming I am working on a half square triangle project right now, so I'm not sick of them, even after making all of them for the book. So,
I think I'm with you. I could make them forever. It's like I could put them in everything. It's like a quilt's not
complete
unless there's one in there. It's like,
I agree.
Yeah,
I don't know, something about them.
They make everything special. You have to have some angles in the quilt. You have to have.
They're like candy for quilters. I don't know. They're just cool.
So what is, first, before we talk sort of about the content of the book, tell me what is your favorite method of making them? I think we all get to one groove where it's like zen. You can just do that same thing. How do you like to make them?
Right. So, and I've had a lot of practice, as I'm sure you can imagine, making them. And my absolute favorite way to make them, and it's in the book, is an 8-at-a-time way.
Oh, okay.
So you, instead of having your traditional, you know, one diagonal line across your squares, you do two in an X. Mm-hmm. And you still sew on either side of the line, but when you cut them all apart, you end up with 8 instead of 2. And you end up taking out a seam. Like, you're not doing as many seams as you would if you did, like, a 4-at-a-time method.
Mm-hmm.
You take 2 out, I think. So that's my favorite, and it's what I personally find is the fastest for me.
Oh, then do you still have to trim them up a little bit? Because they're still a little oversized?
Yeah, I wish I could tell you some secret magic way where there's no trimming, but, I mean, it's a necessary evil. It's so worth it, but,
Way back in the dark ages when we did, like, you know, 3 7/8 or whatever it was, and then you had so many that warped that you couldn't use them anyways. So in the book, let's talk about the book, because it's broken up into kind of two parts. So tell me a little bit about it.
Right. So there's 12 quilt projects in it. They're broken up into 4 sections, and what each section does is it focuses on a different design element in order to create contrast in your half square triangles. So we're creating, in the first section, we're creating contrast with color, so color choices creating the contrast. In the second section, we're playing with scale, so playing with using supersized half square triangles and then mixing different half square triangle sizes in the same quilt. Mm-hmm. The third section, we're adding in a patchwork element, which is my personal favorite. So creating half square triangles from piece blocks and playing around with all the possibilities that come out of that type of technique. And then finally, we've got a huge 60-block kind of library for you to build your own quilt, including a really fun sampler quilt. Yeah, so it's super fun. I wanted it to be very intentional, and I think that we landed there.
Yeah, so. I love the sampler part.
Yeah, me too.
You can learn so much by making by making different style blocks. Don't you think? Don't you feel like that?
Oh, I absolutely agree. We love doing them. I teach locally, and I teach a number of Block of the Month clubs. And they're the most fun. And I think you just get a lot out of making a lot of different blocks. Yeah. It's just good practice too. I mean, especially like with the blocks
bored.
In the chart. Right. You don't get bored because there's so many different possibilities. And 60 is not, I mean, that's the tip of the iceberg. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are so many more. That's just a drop in the bucket compared to what you could do, which is really cool.
And even if you took each of these 60, you can just instantly double it by changing the color placement.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I used four colors in each block, but you could use two, you could use 16. I mean, you could do so many different things. It's really, it really puts the power, takes it out of my hands and puts it in the reader's hands.
Yeah. And it makes interesting quilts to have all of that sort of different motion going on, and it lets you play with your fabric.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And that was one thing I always felt like, I don't know, when I see a quilt pattern, sometimes I wonder like, what's the why? Why did somebody decide to use those colors or those fabrics? And so for each pattern in the book, I've told you why I chose this color palette or why I chose these types of fabrics. Because I like that kind of a little bit of behind-the-scenes information into why the designer chose to do this versus that. So just a little extra fun info.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
Okay, tell me about the scale, the part on scale. What do you mean by that?
Really what I mean is more relative scale. So just scale in terms of the piecing, not necessarily in terms of the fabric. So scale is at its most simple, just talking about size. Mm-hmm. So one of the quilts in that section has giant, super-sized half-square triangles. So it's just playing with the size of the actual blocks in order to achieve maybe a different design.
I like that because I actually like making things oversized because then
Me
you
too.
Let the yeah you then you let the fabric really do the work.
Yeah,
it makes you think about the patchwork differently when there's so much of one color of fabric or one print of fabric.
I absolutely agree, and it's such a good way to show off if you have we all have that stack of corded fabric.
Yeah.
It's just super special and you don't want to cut it up that much. And so using supersized, a supersized block is a great way to show it off. And that's the nice thing about that quilt is you can easily, use any of the block patterns that are in the block section to make your own supersized quilt. And they're so fast. So everybody likes that. You know, you need that always in the back of your pocket, the super quick, I need a gift.
Yes.
Somebody had a baby, quilt.
Right. The baby just came early.
Ah! Exactly. And I haven't made the quilt yet because, that'd be too much planning.
Do you tell people how to upscale the size in here?
It is actually, the quilt that is in there is a 4x4. So any of the blocks are already interchangeable. Same amount of fabric, same amount of everything. One thing that's also in there, though, is how I have a workshop in there on how to resize any block-based quilt pattern. So that really can be applied to any of the quilts that are in the book, but really a lot of different quilt patterns in general could be altered using that information.
Yeah, that is excellent information, because I find that that's a big question people have, because they maybe didn't have any formal training or haven't pursued any kind of understanding, formal meaning, like a quilt class that teaches them block construction. And so if you don't understand block construction, you don't understand how to change it.
Right, exactly. I mean, I think that's a huge question that quilt pattern designers, I know I get that question all the time. Mm-hmm. Hi, I love this pattern, but I want to make it this size.
Right.
So, you know, that gives them some of the, you know, the information, and I try to break it down, you know, as much as possible, because I think a lot of it too is some people are just a little bit afraid of math. Mm-hmm. And it's really not bad when you don't let yourself get overwhelmed by it. I think it can be totally approachable if you just take it one step at a time, and by all means use a calculator. You know, it's totally doable.
Right. It's quilter math. I call it quilter math. It's not scary.
That's my favorite part. So most people cringe when they hear that. But of all the things, I love the math. So, but I try to make it as, you know, approachable and the least amount scary as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
least scary. Now, I also found at the back of your book, quilt coloring. You have a coloring book back
here.
Tell me about that.
So this is actually something that I used to include in my tutorials. It's just a page that, you know, I don't know. The fabrics and the colors that I chose for the quilt in the book are my personal, you know, decisions. And I always feel like, well, I kind of want to see what it's going to look like in a different color or in a different arrangement or whatever. So that gives you the opportunity to go ahead and test it out, you know, get your coloring supplies out and play around with your design before you even cut into any fabric. So it's just another way to personalize the quilts and let yourself be the quilt designer.
Right. And coloring books are really big right now, so
they can
print off the page and color their quilt in. Clever girl, you are.
Trying.
So tell me, we have to wrap it up, but tell me what your latest fabric line is that's in stores right now.
Sure. It's called Curiosities, and it features my quite popular bunny, George.
Oh.
He finally has his own fabric.
Oh.
So that's a pretty big deal.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, Jenny, this has been so much fun. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You can visit Jenny Baker at incolororder.com. This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. You can visit allpeoplequilt.com and me at patsloan.com.
Remember to visit bookquilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.